I graduated SEAL training or Hell Week with 20 guys out of 135 that started our BUDS class. So we started with 135. We got to Hell Week with 43. We came out of Hell Week with 20. That requires an extreme amount of mental toughness. So if I proved that I was extremely mentally tough and at the same exact point in life could not throw a baseball due to the yips, then the yips cannot be due to a lack of mental toughness.
Put another log on the fire. Nobody here is getting tired.
Welcome to the Fire Pit with Matt Ginella.
As Will Zalatoris used a lab to finish second at Riviera, and Phil Mickelson used one at LIV Golf's Jeddah event to finish T6, we're rolling right into part six of this series on the rise and relevancy of lab golf. If you've been following along, you know by now this is not just a story and a series about putters and putting strokes. It's also a story about ingenuity, overcoming adversity, some risks which resulted in rewards. Throw in the cultivation of relationships, serendipity, mental toughness, timing, technology, some sweat marketing with a sprinkle of stubbornness, and you have the American dream. Several of them, actually. How many more episodes in this series, you ask? I'm not really sure yet. As many as it takes to tell this story, because for me, knowing where it ends and the people who have offered their time, insights, and perspectives, it's all worth it. I hope you feel the same. In part five, we met Brett Rumford, the Australian short game guru who pushed back on the original directed force technology. And after a few passionate exchanges with Sam Hahn and lab leadership, Rummy is now all in on the product, process, and the results.
When you get to that first green, it's just all about locking into holding a putt. And just the more things that you can eliminate in the thought process with putting, then the better. You know, simplify it to just hitting that the best putt you can. And a classic example was the story I told at the Cottesloe Open where I've got a 30-footer. There's lots of stuff that can happen in between the impact of that golf ball and it going in the hole. But at the end of the day, you just got to give up on that and just put the best stroke you can on it. And that's what was really evident. It was just an amazing moment for me, which I went, okay, I get it. I understand what Sam's on about and Bill and the technology, what it's all about. So it was just purely just emptied. It was amazing. It was quite... don't want to use the word, but it's very spiritual.
And before we go any further, I just want to say thank you to Dormy Workshop for their sponsorship of this podcast. The Bishop Brothers are based in Halifax, Nova Scotia. They're coming up on 10 years of making handmade leather goods, such as custom head covers and accessories. For their complete collection of originals, head covers, and classics, go to dormyworkshop.com and use promo code FIREPIT15 for 15% off your next purchase. So, as I explained in part one, the reason I started reporting this story and series was a byproduct of Lucas Glover going from having a severe case of the yips to winning back-to-back PGA Tour events in August of 2023. He had gone from the outhouse to the penthouse of putting, and the transformation was seemingly overnight. After a few phone calls, I confirmed that a lab putter definitely had something to do with it. And after initial interviews with Sam Hahn and Bill Pressey, I quickly realized that lab golf was indeed a story I wanted to tell. But I also found out there was more to Glover's success than just the putter. Where we go in the next few episodes is a better understanding of Lucas Glover, his life and his career, a better understanding of the yips, and we talked to Jason Kuhn, the former Navy SEAL who helped Glover overcome every golfer's worst nightmare. And we find out how and why Glover decided to try a lab putter. We start with Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf since 2018, and his thoughts on Glover's back-to-back wins. And again, this interview with Hahn is in August of 2023, only days after Glover's second win.
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely nuts. I mean, there's nothing to say. I mean, it just... there's nothing to say that hasn't been said in you know the tens of thousands of words that have been written about him in the last couple of weeks, and he deserves every one of them. I've I've seen some remarkable turnarounds. I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like it. And it's so fucking validating. And, you know, that all of this is kind of happening when it is, you know, Adam's stats going through the roof this last, you know, couple of years since he's been using it. And, we got a handful of other guys out there that are doing really well. We've had some wins. We had two wins on the Live Tour. We had a web.com or a Korn Ferry win this year as well from a guy from Grayson Murray, who's, you know, same kind of thing. I mean, really, really struggled on the greens. And then now Lucas and Lucas is, so he's one of the few guys that, you know, one of the few pros that I've had very little interaction with. That was born entirely through Liam. So, Lucas ran into Liam at one of the tour stops. You know, as the story goes that he's talked about, he was just like, just give me Adam's putter and don't tell me a thing.
After playing professional baseball for 7 years, Liam Bedford of Melbourne, Australia, got a college golf scholarship at what is now Bushnell University in Eugene, Oregon. Their home course is Emerald Valley, which is where the offices of Lab Golf are located. His wife, who was getting her PhD at the University of Oregon, is what inspired the full-time move from Australia to the United States. Like Sam Hahn, Bedford found Lab putters by way of Bob Duncan, who taught out of Emerald Valley.
About a month before I graduated, me and Sam would run into each other all the time because he's a member out of Emerald. And about a month before I graduated, he offered me a job to work at Lab in customer service. At the time, we were only, I think I was like the eighth or ninth employee at the time. And yeah, we only had the directed force at that time. But my first introduction was like, 2019. I think it was 2019 with Bob Duncan on the putting green at Emerald Valley.
Bedford worked his way up to run the tour department and player development for Lab Golf. As he's going from PGA Tour putting green to putting green, I asked if he would share an example of his sales pitch.
So I don't really have a pitch. I mean, I'm pretty organic as far as like it's. I'll bring it up in a conversation, or like I want it. I don't want it to ever feel like I'm making guys or doing something that they don't want to do. But the thing that's pretty hard to go past is the face stays square by itself. If you keep the shaft on plane, the face will return square. And if you can return this face square, the ball, the starting line is going to start where you're aiming it, and it gives you the best chance to make the putts and start the ball in your starting line. There's a lot that goes into putting as far as green reading, speed, and line, and you've got to match all those three. But if you can start the ball in your line at a higher percentage of the time, you have to have a better chance of making more putts. The biggest thing I emphasize is the face is staying square. And also, because of where it's balanced and where it's shafted, we're shafting essentially very close to the center of mass. So with that force, with the force coming through the ball, pretty much across the face, smash factor is the same. So the sweet spot on that face, because of how we balance it and how we shaft it, the sweet spot is huge. Like I typically get guys to hit three different putts. I hit a normal putt and then get to hit one really heavy toe and really heavy heel and watch the balls roll. And all three are almost identical. And that's when everybody's like, oh shit.
Given the looks of Lab, the sale of the product has never been easy. But like Pressey, Holm, and Hahn before him, Liam Bedford leans into the unique look and uses it to his advantage.
That's a part of the stick too, right? Like, it's got to be that ugly for a reason. Like, we're not just going to make a putter that looks like a spaceship just to make something look like a spaceship. Like, it's got this function in there. And so, like, it's pretty easy to explain. And then, especially most of the time, it's just like other reps who are friends that are poking fun and giving me shit, or players that are giving me shit. And like, it's water off a duck's back. It's all part of it. It's all fun. Like, when guys actually get to roll it, like, they'll make fun of the directed force specifically. And just like, oh man, that thing's huge. And that thing looks like a bottle opener. It's a branding iron. But then they actually hit putts with it and they're like, oh shit, like this thing rolls the hell out of it. And it's I typically always try and take a directed force with me for most places I go, because I want people to do that. I want people to be like, why the hell would you make that? And then it's a good opportunity to be like, well, let me show you why.
Is this fun?
It's amazing. It's amazing. How cool is this? Like, we're a small company that 3 years ago, I felt guilty buying a stapler on company money. Now it's it's not that we're we've got all this excess cash now, but like it's to see the things, the growth of the company. We're in a new building now. We're on like our building that we're at now is at Emerald Valley's golf course, which is a gorgeous championship 18-hole golf course where the Ducks play out of. Our facility's there. We've got a bunch of guys that love golf, that are around golf. The atmospheres, the culture in the company's great. It's just really cool. We're moving in the right direction, and not only are we moving in the right direction of growth, the culture is staying the same as well. And we've got a really good bunch of guys. And even though that's weird to say, it's 60 people, it still feels like a small little family.
Bedford doesn't know Bill Pressey very well, but he certainly knows who he is. And here he reflects on Pressey's ingenuity and impact.
What else can you say? But the resilience is a great word. He had an idea and had and brought it to life. It wasn't just that he had an idea and talked about it and did something. He figured it out. Like he went forward and tried and tested and tried and tried and tried until it worked. Until he found out a way that he could manufacture it. So then he could not just make one, he could make multiple. And the concept is brilliant. Like the whole concept is absolutely brilliant. Making something that's lying will balance, so the putter's going to try and stay square. It's incredible. Like that's such a great idea and such a great thing that we joke all the time at work. Like how did nobody think of this beforehand?
From Pressey, I had Bedford summarize Sam Hahn's role and impact on the company.
Sam has got a brilliant brain. He just knows how things are going to work. I feel like he knows something that we all don't. Like we all, there'll be things that happen and we're just like, what the hell, Sam? Like you're just putting us in a huge pickle. And then it turns out that was the best decision that we've made. He is brilliant. He can't. The best part about Sam is he is the most caring, loving boss that you could ask for. Like he genuinely cares about every single person that is in that building and wants everybody to live a happy and fulfilling life. And that's probably part of the reason why we have been successful over the last couple of years, is because he cares about people more than he cares about the business. But because he cares about people, people care about the business.
What are some stories that you have, some personal stories of like watching somebody have that aha moment and being like, wow, that's cool?
I mean, you can't go past Lucas, right? Like Lucas is unbelievable. Since he's put the putter in play, I think he's had 1 week in negative strokes gained putting where that was the normal. His first six events with it, his worst finish was a T6. Like it's insane. Like that, how one piece of equipment change can just straight up change a guy's mentality and his whole energy. That his confidence level is truly, it was remarkable. Like I speak with his agent Mac quite a little bit, and just from his team side of things, like the amount of confidence that they have in themselves now that they can actually go win. I truly don't know if in 6 months ago that like Lucas will finish well, but he has to hit it five shots better than anybody else to have a chance. But now like his putter was what won him the back nine at the FedEx.
Meet Mac Barnhart of Rock Sports. I got to know him in the 1990s working at Sports Illustrated when Mac was managing, among others, Davis Love. Many would say it was Barnhart who helped cultivate the Sea Island mafia of tour pros. Barnhart still lives in the Sea Island area and runs Rock Sports, which is essentially a team of people who manage the lives of professional golfers all over the world.
Yeah, I came up under Vinny Giles. You know, Vinny was probably one of the best amateurs ever. And I don't know if I'd have got into this job if you'd have told me my job was to go sell advertising on players. It would have no meaning to me. But Vinny was he was a player's manager, and that's how he brought me into business. So if you just said, hey, I'm going to get into this and you've got to go sell hat deals, it would have never occurred to me to do that. But to have purpose in kind of their lives, being part of the we in them it's pretty exciting. It's as good as it gets.
How many players would you say you've worked with, so to speak, over the 31 years? Would you have any estimate?
Gosh, I don't know. Probably 40, probably. Yeah, 40 or so.
And when did Lucas Glover come into your life?
After he graduated Clemson in 2001, played in the Walker Cup, and he signed with us after that when he turned pro.
And what's your first recollection of Lucas Glover? Like, what would you have summarized that beginning like?
Had dinner with him in Greenville, South Carolina, and the restaurant's still there. I can't remember the restaurant. I mean, you know, you watch him play, you meet the parents, you're around the coaches, you're around his teammates, but just he and I sitting in a restaurant, dinner's over, and just I knew then, I'm like, you know, this guy's different. We became very close friends real quick. He had the kind of same Southern upbringing I had. His dad played pro baseball, or, you know, and my dad played pro baseball, and we just had it wasn't like a lot of the other golfers that I dealt with. He had a little different mode.
And, meaning it was, there was something that, you know, a different meaning, like there was a little more grit, a little more grind, or a little more.
Yeah, absolutely. Now he reminded me more of a baseball player mentality. There wasn't much of fodder in his speaking of golf. It was see ball, hit ball. He was not one of these. He wasn't caught up in how good he looked on the course. He wasn't caught up in how anything other than playing golf. I mean, he was just that guy. And very honest, and, you know, shared his thoughts really well, which is, you know, at 21 years old, not many people are developing that yet, but he seemed to have his thoughts that way, right?
Your life coaching these guys from the beginning, like, and understanding, like, just because you have a win doesn't mean you've got 10 wins coming. You've got to, like, you got to bank and understand it's a commitment to this bigger thing. That's my sense.
I mean, I think over time it's changed a little bit, but, you know, this is a really crazy sport in that you have coaches at high school, you have coaches in college, and you get out and you're the sole proprietor of this business. And it's not like you have peers that, you know, it's not like you have teammates as a baseball team does to come in and shake you loose every once in a while. And if you come out and you're playing and you're a big enough deal, you've got a lot of people telling you what you want to hear at all times. And the guys get used to that. They don't even understand someone going against, you know, about if you have a different idea. You see these guys struggle. Who do they turn to? You know, who's organizing who you turn to? I used to use this Alex Rodriguez, you know, I don't know how much money he made for the Yankees, but he rounded second. He didn't question. He slid, stood, or went home. And I think there's comfort in that. So I think having a team around these players, that's not just a team saying, hey, how much money can we make? Yeah. I mean, really, you know, if you play well, you'll make money. If you don't play well, you won't make money. It's kind of easy, whether off the course or on the course. So if in the sense of how you approach these players, now I've been doing it for so long, I've seen careers start and careers end. So you kind of have a blueprint of what's going to happen. They're going to come out. You've heard me say it. We use this talent minus distractions equals performance. These kids have no distractions coming out of college. They're just balls to the wall. And then, you know, things happen. And distractions don't mean negative. They mean great things. You win. That's a distraction. Get married, have kids. You know, every player is going to go through this. You're going to go through ups and downs. And when it's up, you've got everybody in the world. And when you're down, I look around and there seems to be nobody. There's nobody guiding the path back, I guess. And so I don't know if it's life coaching. Sometimes it is life coaching. Sometimes it's trying to help them because they do have a life. And they pretty much, most of these guys have done nothing but play golf their whole life. That's it. And, you know, it's sad to me, but so they don't have a lot of, you know, their life is made. I mean, making it in the golf is started at such a young age now. They didn't play other sports. They didn't do anything, right? So I guess life coaching comes in, but, you know, it's managing whatever's thrown at you because, you know, as we know with Lucas, you know, it can be as bad as it can get and it can be as good as it can get. It doesn't take long. It changes in a hurry and you got to shift gears.
Prior to August of 2023, Lucas Glover had 4 PGA Tour wins, which included the 2009 U.S. Open at Bethpage Black. He has played in 2 President's Cups, 1 Walker Cup, and 2 Palmer Cups. Three of his wins and all of his team events happened in the first 10 years of his 20-year career.
What was Lucas's biggest highs that you've seen? What are some of the most amazing moments in Lucas's career?
I mean, when he won Disney, his first win was a big one. Obviously, winning the U.S. Open, Bethpage, was monstrous. They all weren't just wins. There were signs, things happening that you could start to see with Lucas. But, you know, he was never in all these ups and downs. He's never really been down. He's been frustrated, but he was never, there was never like, well, can I do this type attitude? It was just like, you know, what are we going to do next kind of thing to get it back. He's not a high, high guy. I mean, the U.S. Open, it was fun, but, you know, he was back in, you know, Travelers playing the next week, playing golf. He likes to beat people, but having the trophies and stuff, he doesn't linger on that too much.
At Bethpage in 2009, as Mac alluded to, it was a major for the meteorologists. Round one was washed out. So was most of round two. It was so bad, it ended on a Monday. And in spite of it all, Glover shot rounds of 69, 64, 70, and 73 to finish 4-under and beat Ricky Barnes, David Duval, and Phil Mickelson, who all tied for second at 2-under.
Bethpage, that golf course alone on a perfect day is a grind, right? Like that's
yeah.
That's Bethpage Black. Then you throw in a U.S. Open, U.S. Open rough. You throw in the gallery, New York City, boisterous. You throw in this massive weather shit show, tee times, just logistics, everything. Probably not entirely surprising that given all those circumstances, Lucas comes out on top.
That helped. It made it as tough as you could. He didn't get to play on Thursday. Doubled his first hole. So that's just perfect, Lucas. Put his back against the wall and see what happens, right? But he loves New York. He's a big Yankees fan. So it was almost, that was all perfect for him. He loved it. That's where he wanted to be. You know, Lucas, up until recently, super low scoring events were not his forte. He just didn't shoot low enough. But you put him on a golf course where par was really good, he'll whoop you. That's his stuff, and he's tough. You know, the tougher it is, it seems like he can get a little tougher. But it was a godsend, you know, because he had played in that U.S. Open before, and when he qualified the next time, he even mentioned to him, he goes, "I like that place." I remember pretty distinctly him, "I like that place," because it was tough. And that's what I think he comes out the best, is the tougher you make it, the better he is.
The lows, Mac, I know you say he doesn't get in there or he doesn't even come, but there have been moments in his life that he's probably leaned on you more or leaned on other people more. Are there moments, where you've felt like, over these last, 22, 23 years, you've had to like be a little more hands-on with his being a friend more than anything?
Life happens. We've all been through it, right? Heck yeah. It's nothing better than to have someone lean on you. That makes you feel purposeful, right? And Lucas, Lucas has got some really good friends. It's not just me. I always tell people the only I in this thing is Lucas, and there's a lot of we's. There's a lot of people that, that Lucas has got really strong relationships with people, and the friends around him, the people, what they'll do for him. There's Michael Sims, and there's a kid named David Griffiths that nobody remembers, that from England. And the messages that continually go around between us, all of us. So Lucas has had that strong friendship base because of who he is. Right. And so, yeah, there's been incredible downtimes. But like I say, it never felt, it was, sometimes it was frustrating that he was down, but it never felt hopeless. There was never anything like that. So, but you kind of dig it when, I know he's going to come back, I know he's going to be okay, but, just to have, you're going to this is what the life is. And a lot of these guys, when they go through these times, if they don't have anybody to reach out to, and they don't really have a stable footing of knowing who their base is. And Lucas has got a lot of base. He's got a lot of guys that are in his corner, and that no matter what, regardless. And I think that helps in these times.
Mac mentioned Michael Sims, one of the more thoughtful, kind, and spiritual people I've met in my travels playing and reporting on golf. Like our mutual friend, John Ashworth, Simsy is famous for his sloth-like tempo, not only in his golf swing, but his life cadence. The pace of his soul moves slowly, and that's seemingly because it's so big. A regular at Goat Hill Park, Sims prefers to play persimmons. But back in 2001, he was not only the winner of the North-South at Pinehurst, in which he beat Bryce Mulder in a 38-hole final, he was the quarterfinalist at the U.S. Amateur at Eastlake, which was won by Bubba Dickerson. Worth noting, his buddy Lucas Glover played that year in the U.S. Amateur, and he was knocked out in the first round of match play. Sims is now a 45-year-old Bermuda native who worked with Bob Toski, and although he's no longer chasing it, he has played in all five Butterfield Bermuda Championships. Sims is currently working with Barnhart at Rock Sports and, in a pinch, has caddied for Glover over the years.
How would you summarize your relationship with Lucas Glover?
He's one of my best buds. We've known each other for a long time. We've supported each other through a lot of good times, hard times, and everything in between.
Give us your perspective on kind of his career, his secret sauce to being able to sort of have the career that he's had.
I mean, it's grit. There's a lot of heart in it, and he just never gives up. I mean, you've seen what it's looked like in the last, prior to these last 4 months. I mean, you tell me. That would drive anybody crazy. But he never stopped working at it or trying to figure it out. You know, he just never gives up. That's him. I mean, he's a gentleman at the same time, you know, he's a fierce competitor. And it's his heart that gets him through all this stuff. It's that inner belief of, I know I can do this. Yeah. I mean, and then his career, I mean, what's happening right now is very special. and it's unlocked a lot of doors for him.
We're getting to what was special, but first, it's January 2023. Liam Bedford, who's Labs tour rep, is out working the practice putting greens on the PGA Tour. Mac Barnhart and Michael Sims are riding sidecar to Lucas Glover's 20th year on the PGA Tour, and where we're at with his career is that he has become infamous for his putting. He's not only on a long stretch of poor putting stats, in which he's back of the pack in every category, it's also that he's looking bad doing it. Whatever the phrase must-see TV is, any and all clips of Glover with a putter was the complete opposite of that. There wasn't a golfer on planet Earth who didn't cringe at the sight of Lucas Glover on a putting green. And yet, he kept going. He continued to compete, to cope, and in some cases, make a cut and cash a check. It was nothing short of remarkable. Here's Mac Barnhart summarizing Glover's first few months of 2023, but also the last few years in general.
I think he's one of the top 10 ball strikers that's been measured since they came out with ShotLink. So you can imagine to be able to do that much of the game and then a 2-foot putt drive you and, you know, go into hysteria. I probably have lost more players through the yips than I have through injury. No, I'll never admit it because you just don't say it. You just don't say yips, you know, it's crazy. Because they would rather say, you know, it's a wrist injury or a back injury, but it's the yips and it just happens. And that's one of the big things in this. I hope that maybe we can get back by the fact that if you have the yips, it's not a mental weakness. It's not a mental, you know, it's not like you just can't pull it off, can't handle the pressure, because that's not what it is. But yeah, it's frustrating to watch a guy that can do the tough elements so well and the things you would think were easy. But the thing about Lucas was that he never was like he didn't quit working. He didn't make an excuse about it. He would tell me, you know, my hands are numb. I can't feel my hands. He goes, that's not being nervous. Nervous is not that, right? You don't win the U.S. Open being nervous. So it's just been, you know, to watch him go through what, I mean, we did anything. We try anything. We putted with our eyes closed. He putted with his eyes closed. He's practiced. We've searched out every possible help with this that we could, and we've kind of found it. It looks like, but there's no way to describe the people to understand that you can do something, and then your body not allow you to do it, and that's hard to watch. I mean, that's hard to watch.
This is the call by Lanny Watkins and Whit Watson when Glover missed a short one trying to break 60.
This putter goes way back, and he completely it's like he almost missed that. Wow. Is that? I've never seen anything like that.
Whit Watson said what most people were thinking when Glover flashed an example of the yips. I have never seen anything like that. Going back to Mac Barnhart and the idea that Glover was trying anything and that they searched out all they could find and that he seemed to think they've found the solution.
What'd you find?
I found a guy that, a former Navy SEAL sniper. I found heard about him a couple years ago when the Braves won the World Series. There's a guy named Tyler Matzik that pitched, and I follow the Braves, and this guy was out of baseball with the throwing yips. And here he is striking out people in, you know, in the highest pressure situations you could ever do. And I'm like, this isn't possible. What's this guy taking? And knowing some of the Braves people, and I finally figured out there's just this former Navy SEAL that used to play baseball. So I found him and called him and said, hey, man, you know, he goes, well, I don't know golf. And I was like, well, I've got a kid with the yips. And he goes, that's okay. He just, as a matter of fact, he said to me, that's okay. So I talked to him for a long, long time. And I went to Lucas and said, hey, I got somebody. And he goes, no, I'm good. I'm good. I've got it. So it took a year and a half, I think, after I started talking to the SEAL to convince Lucas to talk to him. I think he started talking to him in May of this year. But I got such a comfort. It's like my heart stopped almost when the way Jason Kuhn said to me, he goes, nah, it's okay. The yips, it's not a big deal. Because, man, you go to any other person and say the yips, they're like, whoa, I don't think it's solvable. I don't, you know, Ian Baker Finch and people have been run out of the game with it. But, yeah, that's what that was the start of it. It wasn't just that, but that was the start of it.
Morning, Jason.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Give me one second here.
Can you kind of just essentially introduce yourself? You know, I'm Jason Kuhn. You know, and then just give me like a line or two or a bio of just a short bio in terms of who you are and how you kind of fit into this narrative on Lucas and you know where he is now and kind of his life and mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Jason Kuhn. I'm a performance coach. I've been working in human performance and team building for almost a decade. And August will be 10 years since I started Stonewall Solutions, which is the leadership development, performance training, and team building company that I run. As I was doing that, I was working with a lot of sports teams, corporate groups. And as I would work with sports teams, I would meet players, tell them my story. I had the yips really intense case of it in 2001, 2002 in college. It ended my career. I threw 6 wild pitches in an inning. So as I travel around, tell my story, work with players, people would come up to me afterwards sometimes and tell me, hey, I'm struggling with the same thing, mostly in baseball. And I started working with players just kind of on a pro bono friendly manner, offering advice as some things that I had done to help defeat it myself. I never played again competitively, but I taught myself over time how to throw again. So eventually I met Tyler Matzik. He was out of baseball for 5 years. He was a former first rounder out of Mission Viejo, and we worked together. I developed a system called Ironing It Out. Our theories and thoughts on the yips were very much in alignment, and we developed a lot of it together as we worked together working through this. We also worked on the traditional mindset stuff that I teach. He got back to the big leagues, won the World Series with the Braves in 2021. So what led into golf was Mac Barnhart with Rock Sports Group introduced me a couple of players working or playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, and I worked with them through the yips. It was successful. And then from there, that led to Lucas Glover, and him and I worked together starting in last April. And then the results that, you know, he's had have been in the media, things like that. So some of that has been credited to the training of, you know, him and I. He did it all, not me. I can't do what he does, but I helped him. You know, I worked as an asset to help him solve that specific problem. So prior to all of that, I was a college baseball player and a Navy SEAL. And that's where I learned. I put all of this together through experience-based lessons. And I wanted to help provide something for athletes, competitive athletes, primarily pro athletes, that was practical and effective. I think that what sports psychology offers them often and the mental skills coaches hired by the team are well-intended people who provide value, but I don't think it's on a level that matches everything else that is offered to them in terms of strength and conditioning coaches, pitching coaches, swing coaches, whatever. And a lot of it is somewhat ineffective. You know, it's just not practically useful.
Do you remember, did Mac reach out to you? Was it an email? Was it a phone call? How did you guys actually get connected?
I believe Mac reached out to me through a DM of some sort, whether it was an email or perhaps on Twitter or Instagram. I want to say it was Twitter, but I can't remember quite for sure. But yes, he had been researching solutions to the yips. And, you know, the traditional methods are all out there. If you Google yips, there'll be all sorts of things that pop up and they'll promise you the world, charge you a ton of money, and they have no real credible results, or maybe one breakthrough case out of tons of people that they've worked through. So the percentage of success is very, very low. So he started looking up some other ways, I believe. I don't want to put words in his mouth. And he came across me and asked me if I thought it would translate into golf. And I believe 100% that it would, because it's the same problem, just in a different action.
I mean, there's a lot of people involved in this. So it's not just me, but, you know, it's Michael Sims and, you know, Colby Toure as trainer and Jason Bell, you know, is instructor. There's a lot of people talking behind the scenes, like, what can we do? You know, what this is happening. And it was a ball change. And then it was, you know, Tommy Lamb, who's his caddy, who hung with him like nobody's business. But there was a lot of people working behind the scenes to get kind of figure this thing out. But I knew the minute I talked to Jason that I had some, I was like, wow, this might work. Cause this guy didn't even flinch. He'd say he'd had to throw in yips. He's like, I got it. Don't worry about it. And he goes and he tells, I'll never forget him saying, hey, listen, this is not an ongoing thing. You'll go through my program and you either get rid of them or not. And I got so much confidence in that, and knowing Lucas and knowing after, I think, three sessions with this guy, the confidence changed. I saw Lucas. I just saw it was like a different sounding person. And it kind of, I mean, yeah, that was when I say I found, I mean, it's whatever, but it's been a search for a long, long time.
You know, in golf, that the yips is such like, it's like Voldemort and, you know, Harry Potter. It's just the name you don't speak of. But that you were like, yips, I got Mac, I got this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had worked with several amateur baseball players at that point, probably 30 or 40, and had been successful with all of them. And so I felt very confident in my ability to solve it. I understand what the yips is. I know how to define it. I understand the solutions to defeat it. And every time I work with a player, it gets better and better as we refine that process. And I think it's funny that you referred to Voldemort in Harry Potter, because I actually used that reference in one of the podcasts I was on before too. And so has Matzik in some of the media interviews that he's been in when he speaks about the yips. But one of the things that we have to do is break down the barriers of the stigma that is associated with the yips, because that's part of what's causing the problem. People aren't allowed to talk about it. And then it starts to manifest and it gets worse and worse. And then they're in such a hole. And the deeper it's set in, the harder it is to defeat. And I think that people don't want to talk about the yips because they don't understand it. And naturally, as human beings, we're afraid of things that we don't understand. But when you watch a guy who's getting paid millions of dollars to throw a ball or strike it with a club, and they've been doing it their whole entire life, and then they go out and they go out and all of a sudden throw it into their toes or 15 feet over their throwing partner's head when they're normally just nails, you know, that's not because they don't understand how to throw the ball or understand where a release point should be or completely forgot how to mechanically deliver or strike a ball, right? Something else is going on. And one of the things that I did was when I got out of the SEAL teams, you know, when I met with a psychologist, I felt like he was telling me what was wrong with me and then getting frustrated when the methods he would give me would not be effective, rather than listening to me describe what I was experiencing and help me develop a solution. So when I got out of the SEAL teams, you know, I had some confidence and maturity and a lot of experiences. And there's a very similar thing that happens when we shoot a gun. And I finally started asking myself the right question. I just tracked my arm until I'm going to track my arm until it feels something feels different. And I stopped right about here. And I was like, okay, something's happening right here. What is happening? Why is it happening? What's causing it? How do I override it? How do I stop that from happening? How do I get the dexterity and fluidity back? And I just started reverse engineering and peeling back the layers and developing this solution. But the number one thing is they're defining it wrong. So they're treating the symptom, not the cause. I'm generalizing sports psychology. And then for those that do define it well, the methods that come into place are revisiting trauma, you know, visualization and, you know, so some breath work and stuff like that. And those can be a part of the solution, perhaps. They don't even have to be, but to consider those to be a comprehensive solution that's going to help the player be able to overcome the problem and play competitively with cameras on and tons of people watching and things like that is ridiculous, in my opinion.
What's a session entail? Is that a phone call? Is that
a- It's a Zoom call. It's a Zoom call like this. I don't think Jason, I just met Jason the other day for the first time. I hadn't met him in 2 years. I've talked to him a bunch and it's a Zoom call like this. I don't think Lucas has met him in person either. You don't need to. But you meet him in person, it's even better. You get an understanding of things that just has not been looked at as far as how to approach this yip thing.
Mental, physical, combination, spiritual, soulful, how would you summarize it?
You know, I haven't been through the program. God knows I need to, but I haven't been through it. I don't know. I mean, he's explained to me stuff, but I don't want to try to – Yeah. You know, get him on here. He'll tell you.
Oh yeah.
But I think it's I mean, I think he had the yips. He's had throwing yips. And so it cost him his baseball career. So he was he's committed to this. I mean, because after he says to me, after he became a SEAL sniper, he still had the throwing yips. And he goes, so I knew it wasn't a mental weakness. And I was like, you know, everybody thinks it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing the yip, you know, And that's one of the problems, right? That's where it starts, is the embarrassment. And he convinced me that the anxiety was not causing the yips. Anxiety was coming because you had the yips. And that made a whole lot of sense because most of the people want to cure the anxiety. How do you do that? Breathe deep, relax, you know, go into, you know, meditation, whatever. And I don't think that's how Jason does it. I think it may be the opposite. I think you attack. And it must, like I say, I know things with him that, you know, with Lucas as it, you could just, I didn't see it physically with Lucas. I saw it mentally, the way he walked, the way he was talking to me. He just had this different, like, I got it attitude. So much so that when you first started watching it, when somebody tells you they got it and then they get it and you start watching, you know that you're on to something. And I mean, it was pretty exciting. People, we knew. I mean, if we could, the tour doesn't let us gamble, but if the tour let us gamble, we could have hurt them.
Is it ultimately the essence of this mind over matter?
Sort of. So one of the biggest problems, and so what they told me is, hey, you've got performance anxiety. And I never liked that term because I didn't feel anxious when I went out to pitch. All right. I went out in an inner squad as a senior pitcher on a Division I team who the year before was ranked in the top 25. I had pitched in the playoffs as a closing pitcher with bases loaded and in high leverage situations. So now I'm in an inner squad pitching against my own teammates with nothing really at stake. I can completely blow it and I'm still probably going to be our closing pitcher that year because of what I've done in the past. Right. I've already proven myself. So the environment was not escalated in pressure. It was de-escalated. And I walked four straight batters and did not throw a single strike. Now, I wasn't missing the catcher completely, but I was missing the strike zone. And then I went out to warm up a day or two later. Thought, oh, I don't know what happened that day, but I knew that day something was different. Something was off, but I didn't know how to identify what it was. So just tried to put that behind me, move on. And I'm playing catch with my throwing partner. Everything's fine. Everything's normal. Hanging out, joking with the dudes, throwing, you know, focusing on my mechanics. And then all of a sudden I sail one about 15 feet over his head. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I have no idea. Then I threw one way, you know, I thought, well, I got to extend out, you know, just get extension, follow through. And it hooked way over, almost hit a guy, you know, and the guys thought I was joking around. I'm like, dude, what's going on with you? I was like, man, I don't know. So to answer your question, is it mind over matter? Sort of. So the reason why I don't like performance anxiety is because every player I have worked with has said the first time they experienced the yips, they did not feel an elevated level of anxiety or fear. That was a byproduct of the tension occurring in their wrists and hands as they try to deliver or strike the ball and not knowing why it happened, if it's going to happen again, or having a solution for it if it does, which makes you incredibly nervous. And that's where you get the tingling sensation and a similar, you know, a similar sensation as an adrenaline hit. And what that's doing is it's extrapolating the blood from your extremities into your vital organs to keep you alive, and you lose feeling in your hands and feet. But that is on top of the tension that's taking place in the muscle groups in your hand. So the yips is a mechanical. Anytime we strike the ball inaccurately, it's due to a mechanical interruption or a misjudgment in angle or distance, right? And so when it's a mechanical interruption, it's normally due to a lack of awareness or ignorance. So with me having not played much golf, if you watched me putt, you would probably be like, hey, you need to change your grip like this and put your feet closer or wider or whatever. And now that I have that knowledge, I would simply consciously choose to apply it. Or perhaps something's off in my swing that day because it's a very fast, dynamic, you know, somewhat violent motion, especially when we're hitting it with the driver. And something's a little bit out of timing. So you can see that on video, swing coach identifies it, whatever, you fix it. And you just weren't aware that it was off that day. But with the yips, it's a subconscious initiation of tension. It's the predatory survival instincts kicking in due to past experiences and certain levels of awareness and intelligence. So I think it's, for the most part, pretty intelligent, self-aware guys who get this, who care for all of the right reasons. And it's so the sub, if you think of the brain as split into conscious and subconscious or intentional and automated, the automated part of our brain is perceiving a threat. And when it perceives a threat, the body's natural instinct is to create muscle tension and tightness to protect the vital organs. Just like if you're about to get in a car accident, right? You're like this, you're not all loose. And, or if I threw a punch at your chest unexpectedly, but you saw it coming, you're going to make your pectoral muscles tight to absorb that blow to protect the vital organs and your rib cage. You're not going to consciously say to do that or think to do it or engage that. You're going to have a body movement. Your body is going to move and respond involuntarily without you telling it to. Right. So the same thing is happening with the yips. So is it mind over matter? Yes, but it's coming through the subconscious mind, which makes it more difficult because it's automated. It's involuntary. It's unintentional. Right. And it has nothing to do with mental toughness. Players that show up every day battling the yips and playing competitively, knowing that they're struggling with this problem, it's like going out and playing through an injury with a broken wrist. You just can't see it. And they're coming out every day and battling through it, knowing that people don't understand it, knowing that people are labeling them with being mentally weak and can't handle it or whatever else, yet they're showing up every day. And that is mental toughness on display. It's admirable in my book, for as far as I'm concerned. And I'll finish with this. I know I got long with that answer, but I graduated SEAL training or Hell Week with 20 guys out of 135 that started our BUDS class. So we started with 135, we got to Hell Week of 43, we came out of Hell Week with 20. That requires an extreme amount of mental toughness. So if I proved that I was extremely mentally tough and at the same exact point in life could not throw a baseball due to the yips, then the yips cannot be due to a lack of mental toughness.
This has been going on for 10 years. We've tried, you know, we're throwing a lot of ideas out there. You know, we were at Congaree a couple of years ago, and I know he was putting with my, I'm left-handed, he was putting with my putter. And I'm like, man, people switch hitting baseball, use this thing, because he's making everything left-handed, you know? So yeah, I mean, I think that's, you don't want a guy that will just try anything just because you say it, but you've got to say it, you've got to go and give your advice or whatever. But no, it did take a long time for it to sink in, you know. We've had, you know, we had some things working up until then. There's a kid named Ward Jarvis who has done amazing things in this yip category, and he helped Lucas a lot, and Lucas won John Deere. But you know, like I say, we've been throwing ideas out for so long, but it's gotta be his decision, because he's the one that's got to commit to anything that happens. You know, everybody thinks changing teachers or changing clubs, you know, we don't do any of that. That's his decision, right? We'll offer anything up. But yeah, Lucas, I think why he's still here at 43, why he's still, you know, competitive is the fact that he's not flippant about how he changes stuff. I mean, changing golf balls is not an easy process to Lucas. He really dials in and wants to figure out, why is this ball working better? Why is this ball right for me, right? Why is this? Everything he does is like that. So I think that helps. I think a lot of guys, you know, you see them, they get the yips. Well, they don't admit they got the yips. So they start firing teachers and hiring teachers, and they start changing putters, and they're not really focusing on the real truth, right? You know, and in this business, you see it a lot. You know, they're the last people they blame. I think Lucas took responsibility for it being all on him. He really did. But he took it. But it didn't mean that he wouldn't search all corners to find help, but he's going to make the decision. It's never going to be us.
With golf, we're having much faster results. And I think part of that is because there's a tool in your hand, and you can look at the ball instead of looking at the target. And there's several benefits in that as it relates to the yips that, you know, when I trained with players, it's hours and hours and hours of training. So I can't get into the real depth of that without taking up, you know, too much of your time. But I think those are two things are the reasons why we're getting faster results. And I think that the switch of the putter is a good idea because it changes the mechanical action. Does it necessarily mean it's going to work for every single person in yips relief? No, because there's more to it than that.
Lucas Glover specifically, you know, by the way, like Mac was saying, and this, I started reporting this in the September of last year, but at that time, Mac was saying that you guys had had three Zoom sessions and that maybe there was a chance that, you know, you didn't even actually have to meet in order to do. Have you ever actually met Lucas Glover yet?
Yeah, believe it or not, we have never met in person, but I'm really looking forward to it. I love the guy. I've developed we have a professional working relationship, but I would say a friendship as well. I think he's a fantastic person and well-deserving of his success. And I just couldn't be happier for him. And I really look forward to meeting him in person one day.
You know, I was talking to Jason about how it was going, and he goes, and he was pretty much, yeah, we got it. So I'm hearing the guy talking. I'm hearing Navy SEAL tell me, like, yeah, we got it. And I'm hearing Lucas goes, yeah, I got it. Like, it was just, I was like, whoa. And then you hear from Jason Bell, and you hear from Brad Fax, and you hear from Colby 2A. Everybody I talk to is like, yeah, we're on to something. And you're like, wait a minute. You know, I just got chills thinking about it. I can remember these guys, everybody. Nobody went, wait a minute. No, everybody went, no, this is it. You know, and Simsy, Michael Sims, who talks, you know, he's probably his best friend, talks to him all the time. Michael's a great player, you know, played tour. And it was, everybody knew it. It was everybody at one time was saying, yeah, we're on to something.
Back to Michael Sims.
I knew he could do it. And it was frustrating for the both of us. You know, I mean, for everyone, you know, but again, he never ever gave up. It's just been a neat process to watch him work through all this stuff. You know, I mean, he worked with a mental guy, Ward Jarvis, for quite a while, and it definitely, you know, it still lived there, but it was definitely a little bit better, but it never ever went away. And I think that was the hard part is like just waiting for it to happen. That was the hard part, waiting for it to happen. You know, and you could almost feel it as he was walking up to a green. And we had a lot of conversations about that.
About the weight.
About the weight of it. Yeah. I mean, it's when you don't know why or what or. It's so frustrating because you don't know how to, I don't want to say diagnose it because you know what's happening, but you don't know what to do with it. And that's like, you know, where Mac comes in and, you know, Mac's sitting there, he is following so many things and he came across this guy, Jason Kuhn. You know, we're always taught it's a mental thing, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but my whole life, if you got the yips, it's got to be a mental thing. It's got to be a mental thing. So it was really, really refreshing to hear somebody come out and be like, it's not a mental thing. I just did all of this. And I know I'm mentally strong enough to handle what I have in front of me. Something else is glitching the system. And it's neat that he's able to put it into a formula, and you know what I mean? And it's different for kind of everyone, but with the base always being the same. So he just used his experience to understand and figure a few things out.
And that's the Navy SEAL.
That's the Navy SEAL, Jason Kuhn. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I can't wait to give the guy a hug if he accepts hugs, but a lot of respect to that guy, man. I mean,
with a Navy SEAL, you got to check to make sure they're good with a hug.
Yeah, shoot, man. Gotta make sure.
When did the concept of lab and putters show up on your radar, and then what happened?
You know, again, like I say, there's a whole team of us. There's a lot of people. Brad Faxon is down with Jason Bell in Florida. So, you know, obviously Brad's one of the best putters. And I don't know if I've got the timeline exactly right of when the phone call was made or when, but I know Lucas wanted me to grab a putter from lab, one of the broomsticks. And I remember you go through the whole cycle, right? So what length do you need? Loft, lie, you know, you go all this stuff. You hear it all the time. And he goes, I don't know. He calls me Pooh. He goes, I don't know, Pooh. Just get me Adam Scott's. I'm about the same size as him, and I'll figure it out. And that's what we did. So I called Liam, and I'd never met Liam. And I called him and said, hey, man, could you ship us a putter? And he did, shipped it down. And next thing I know, Lucas is in his garage putting with it. And so I don't remember the exact timeline, but there were no – this was not like ordering a specific putter. Just get Adam Scott's and let's go.
More from Michael Sims.
Matt calls me. He goes, hey, do you know the lab guys? I was like, no, but I can get their number. And he's like, all right, we need to get Lucas a long putter. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, he's going to, you know, try it out in these next couple weeks. I was like, perfect.
And we're back to Liam Bedford. How did Lucas get the putter? Like, what actually physically happened? How were those putters delivered to him?
He called me. Oh, he didn't call me. His agent called me. Mac called me on. Oof, might have been the week of the John Deere, or it might have been the week before the John Deere. Can't actually remember the date. I could look it up. He called me on a Monday. I think it was. It was Monday when I was in the office. I wasn't traveling that week, which was lucky. And he called me, said, hey, can I get pretty much, I want the same thing as what Adam's got. I want the same putter that Adam's got, which we did build it a little bit different. Adam plays, so with a broomstick, because you want it as upright as you can possibly get it, just to have the most replica of a pendulum sort of motion. Typically, we built him as upright as we can get it inside of the legal limit. So the legal limit's 80 degrees. Our standard for a broomstick is 79.5. So typically all of our broomsticks are 79.5 degrees. And Adam actually plays a 78. He plays at one and a half flatter from that. He just feels like he can get into a better posture, make a better stroke, keep it on plane a little better, a little flatter. So we made Lucas's at 79.5. Every other spec on the putter is exactly the same. It's the same head weight, same shaft, same components all around. I built it that day, pretty much as soon as I got off the phone call, built it, and then overnight shipped it to the event that he was playing. And I can't remember which event that was, but we overnight shipped it. And then on Tuesday morning, I texted Lucas, made sure he got it. And he said, I've got it. And that was pretty much how it went down.
We knew we had to go left-handed or something completely different. We needed to get something new in his hands. Because he kind of had a new way to do this, a new brain and a new attitude. And having that be fresh in his hands meant a lot. It helped a ton. And people think it's just the putter. Well, I mean, he's hit some bad putts with that putter. So it wasn't just the putter, but it was a combination, the putter and the new stuff.
Just it seems very quick that you were able to like reverse what seemingly was 10 years of baggage.
Well, he had been fighting it for a while and had an idea of what was going on, but I think it helped to have someone come in and just, hey, this is one, I've been there. Two, I'm not mentally weak and neither are you. And three, this is what it is. This is what's going on. And then, you know, here's how we're going to go about defeating it. But I think that for a guy, I'd give a lot of that back to Lucas, you know, because again, you've got the maturity and the professional makeup and mentality of a true pro, a championship pro at the highest level you can play at your game. And so he was able to pick it up quick, understand it quick, and apply it quick. I didn't have to hold him accountable to doing the drills or whatever. It's like, I got it. And he'd go. And then he'd come back and we kept progressing and getting better. And yeah, there were some ups and downs and whatever. And then, you know, he got to where he did. And it was, it's just so fulfilling. You know, I watching Tyler pitch in the World Series, I bear hugged my wife with tears. And I said, you know, at the time I thought going through the yips was the worst thing that ever happened to me. But now I think it's having lived the life that I've lived, I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because I'd rather be here watching him pitch in the game than pitch in the game myself. Becoming a SEAL after failing or imploding short of my potential in baseball was redemption enough. But to be able to do this and then help a player get back into the game and then he gets back to the big leagues, but then he wins the World Series, I mean, that was enough. Then it goes into golf and Lucas wins a championship, you know, just to get him back doing well enough again, would have been fine, but he wins one. Then he wins another one. And it's just like, you're telling me there's not a guiding hand in this and how it all comes together. You've lost your mind. You know, I don't have enough faith to believe that that's all just random and by chance. I think that, you know, God brings it all together and I could just feel him smiling down on me, blessing me with more than I deserve through all of that. And it's just, it's wonderful.
On that note, and up next, Lucas Glover.
After three or four sessions with him, this new putter idea came. You know, Mac pushed it a little bit and facts, and hey, let's just try it. And I had 2 weeks off around the PGA and mentioned it to Jason Kuhn, and he said, hey man, let's go, let's try it. We got some time, and it just clicked.
Another log on the fire. Nobody here is getting tired.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.